When NASA announced that water had been discovered on Mars, even many of the people who have become jaded about space exploration sat up and leaned forward at that news. This initial discovery has created an avalanche of what's next as far as what is going to be possible following as a follow-up to this initial announcement. My next guest is an expert on space exploration with a special focus on Mars, as evidenced by his recent books. They include Curiosity, an inside look at the Mars rover mission and the people who made it happen, and Innovation the NASA Way. He's an adjunct professor at the University of Laverne, lecturer with NASA and the Johnson Space Center, Rod Pyle. Good morning, Rod.
Good morning. How are you?
Good to have you here. It's pylebooks.com, P-Y-L-E-books.com. And as I said in the intro, Rod, water on Mars, exciting reaction initially, worthy of excitement, or is it a wait-and-see situation?
No, this is worthy of excitement. You know, there's with the general public, I think there's been a bit of water fatigue over the whole Mars story because we've been talking about it since the early to mid-2000s when the Mars exploration rovers were there and first began to see signs of this. And even back in the late 60s when the Mariner orbiters saw what looked like these big water eroded channels. So the question became, we've got this dry desert planet with not much of an atmosphere. Where the heck is all this water now? Where did it go? So for a long time, there's been speculation about where that water ended up. Excuse me. And part of it we know is locked up in the poles, but there had to have been more than that. So the idea was there are probably these huge underground ice deposits and so forth. And frozen water was confirmed in 2008 by the Phoenix lander up near the poles, but we're really hoping to see some kind of wet flowing water somewhere, because that helps identify some of the processes that might be going on. And of course, reopens the discussion about could there be microbial life there. So this recent discovery of what appears to be little gushes of water out of the sides of these canyon walls is really quite exciting. And how it came about is a very neat little story too.
Well, that's the thing too. When we see water, what was discovered, I'm assuming, is the end result of a water flow. Now, I guess the point of interest is, what's the source of that flow?
Yeah, you and everyone wants to know that answer. What they had seen years ago were these streaks coming down the walls of some canyons and gullies, and they could see them from orbit, but the time at which the orbiters went over those areas didn't coincide with when the gushes seemed to be occurring. So what they saw was the result of this wet release of water down the side of these canyon walls. So what's happened since then is a young guy, he was actually from Nepal, who was working at the University of Arizona with some of the people there, and they're very involved in the Mars exploration program, took a closer look at these streaks and the spectral results. If you look at the spectrum of what you're actually seeing in those areas that appear to be wet, they're very salty. So it's got the signature of briny or salty water. And so the question that's kind of remaining is it coming out of the slope wall, which is what most people think, or are the salts in that water somehow absorbing moisture out of the atmosphere? But what we all want to think, of course, is that it's flowing out of the canyon wall itself. And then you have to come up with some kind of mechanism that allows that to happen. There's a lot of discussion going on about that. But whenever you've got discussion, it means people are excited, and that's because they've seen something new.
And unexpected, we're talking about Rod Pyle, space expert. His most recent books, Innovation, the NASA Way, and Curiosity, an inside look at the Mars rover mission and the people who made it happen. Pyle, P-Y-L-E, pylebooks.com is his website. And you're listening to Issues and Ideas. For the uninformed, uninitiated, does it rain in any way, shape, or form to any degree on Mars because of the atmosphere, or is that out of the realm of possibility?
It doesn't appear to be enough atmosphere left to cause clouds of precipitation. There was ground frost seen as far back as the Viking days in the 70s. So we know that water can form on the surface, but the whole environment is just so dry and the air so thin that it was unlikely that we'd see rain or any kind of form of liquid water. So that's, of course, what triggers all this excitement, is that when you see something that appears to actually be actively wet, you want to know how the heck this is happening in this dry, cold environment. And that's what's got everybody so charged up.
Mars is always thought of as a planet that used to be in some way, shape, or form. Does this discovery start to twist that image around to say, well, maybe now Mars is a planet about to be?
Well, I think not quite like that. What it does say is that Mars appears to have once been a lot more like Earth, that it had a thicker atmosphere, that there was probably rain and possibly snow occurring there. And these huge bodies of water, it's estimated there's enough water locked up in ice on that planet to form an ocean pole to pole, something like 30 feet deep. So there's no shortage of water. It's just in all the wrong places to do much good now. It probably won't head back that direction anytime unless we nudge it along with terraforming and try and make it more like Earth with technological intervention of some kind. But it does tell a really interesting story about what Mars must have been like billions of years ago. And some of the results they're getting back from the rovers, especially the Curiosity rover down the floor of Gale Crater, is showing more and more detail about these large standing bodies of water and the effects they had on the environment. So we know they were there. It's really just a question of tracking down where that water went and what those processes were.
How much of this discovery puts into more flux now the International Space Station and U.S. involvement with that? Do they look at those multi-billion dollars a year that could be committed to a space station and say, well, now we know about this and Mars, put the greater financial onus on putting a man on Mars now?
That's an excellent question. It's one that NASA struggles with a lot. Back during the space race, so many things were happening. The budget was much larger. It was almost 5% of the federal budget at its peak. It's about 0.5% now. And back then, they were only running a few programs because NASA was fairly new. Now they've got dozens and dozens of things, including the Voyager spacecraft, which we launched almost 40 years ago, one of which has left the solar system. And we still got to support those. You got to support the space station. You got to build new rockets. You've got to look at climate on Earth and so forth. So the money has to get spread across a very large plane, if you will. So the manned Mars mission idea, or the crewed Mars mission idea, is something that's very near and dear to NASA's heart. But it's a big endeavor. And the more we find out about space travel and long duration time spent in space by human beings, the harder it appears to get. But it's something that's definitely at the top of their agenda. However, there is still a lot of energy and money being spent on more robotic missions. We've got another rover, much like Curiosity, but with much better instrumentation, going up in 2020. And that one will actually be drilling core samples and storing them for later pickup by another spacecraft after that to bring that material back to Earth for a closer look. So that's a great intermediate step towards getting people up there.
And getting a soil sample back to Earth and have a greater ability to examine it, that's got to be a more immediate dream come true for NASA.
It sure is. And it also, on that mission, there is a small instrument that's going to be taking atmosphere into it and trying to extract oxygen. And once you begin to be able to extract oxygen or water from the environment, it makes it a lot easier to go there because you don't have to carry all this stuff with you. You'll have water. You'll have the ability to create breathable air and even rocket fuel probably up there. So these are many, many, many tens of tons of things you don't have to carry along. It streamlines the mission design so it can happen with a lot less mass and a lot less money. So that's something they're really looking forward to.
Yeah, but I'm in the left here doing my reading up on Mars and all things space exploration. I came across, diplomacy and politics, I guess, invades everywhere. It's the 1967 Outer Space Treaty, which forbids nations from, quote, harmful contamination of other planets with Earth biology. So that's something NASA, yes, if they want to do a manned mission, there's something else they have to navigate around, not just the money.
That's absolutely true, and it actually applies to robotic missions, too, because you don't want to drop off a spacecraft that's covered with little Earth critters, microbes, or what have you, and then only to find out later on that the life you found there was stuff you brought along. So that was a problem with the Curiosity mission. Not a problem so much, but something they had to take into account, because they had to make sure when they got readings of organic molecules that it wasn't just some kind of ground contamination. And as they look towards landers that will go closer to any place that has liquid water, like what we're talking about at the opening of the segment, you have to make sure that the spacecraft is absolutely sterile. So back in the Viking days, you remember Viking in the 70s, we had two landers that went down. Those things were sterilized like crazy. They spent about a tenth of the entire mission budget, which was billions of dollars, to make sure that they were absolutely and perfectly sanitized. So that's kind of the gold standard. Since then, it hasn't been quite that rigorous because we're not going towards any kind of liquid water that we look like we could contaminate. But as we get closer to that goal, we have to ramp up the sterilization. There's actually a woman who works for NASA who's called the Planetary Protection Officer, and her job is to make sure that no contamination goes either direction, either up to Mars or another world or coming back to Earth, because we don't want six-legged creatures wandering around that might have come from some hostile environment somewhere else either.
Yeah, unless you start seeing them after a night at the bar. That's a whole other story. But if you want to play catch-up on – I mean, this is a fascinating development for space exploration and to catch up on Mars and the most recent activity. Rod's books are the go-to source, Curiosity, an inside look at the Mars rover mission and the people who made it happen. Innovation the NASA Way, among his most recent books. Find out more about Rod's writings at Pyle, PYLE, pylebooks.com. Rod Pyle, thanks for being here this morning.
Thanks so much.